It is May the 5th, and we are in Yechezkel, and we are in Perek Mem Hei, which is chapter 45, and we are up to Pasuk Yud Beis 12. Last time we did all the measurements of the volume. Okay. Go. No, better that way. Okay.
What pasuk is it?
Yud Beis 12.
45.
And tonight we have an equally difficult pasuk to work through regarding currency, coins, money. Now, before we read this, bear in mind that they had copper coins, silver coins, and gold coins. Obviously, copper being the least expensive, silver next, and then gold. And their coins were based on weight. The greater the weight, the more expensive the coins were. And there are coins that are mentioned in the Torah itself. We of course are aware of the machatzis hashekel that we have to give before Pesach, half a shekel. Today we do it as a zecher. What we do today is not really machatzis hashekel. What we do today, we give three coins, each of which is half of the currency of your country. So we give three half dollars. Why three? Because the machatzis hashekel, when it's spoken about, is alluded to in three different ways. So we give three. But the shekel is a form of currency mentioned in the Torah. Now shekel, what does shekel mean? The word shekel.
Weighted.
Weight. Right. Weighted. Yeah. That's what it means. So obviously that doesn't tell you how much it is. It just tells you that it's a weight of silver that has been formed into a coin. It's not a slab of silver. It's a coin of silver, and it weighs a certain amount. The Torah itself says that the weight of the silver, the shekel, how much is a shekel? It is esrim gera. It is 20 gera. Now, that, of course, you have to know what a gera is. Mm-hmm. But the Torah itself tells you that a shekel is 20 gera. Gera spelled gimel resh. Here, we're going to have it right here in Yechezkel. Historically, the Gemara tells us that... Well, before I get to the historic point, there are other coins that are mentioned in the Torah itself. The Torah speaks about a kikar. A kikar is a very, very large size coin. For instance, the menorah was made out of a kikar of gold, kikar zahav. It was a kikar of gold, not more and not less. It was this massive amount of gold, and that was what it was made out of. The Torah in Parshas Pekudei, when it counts all of the silver, gold, and copper that was collected for the Mishkan, it counts it out for us and tells us how much there was in denominations of kikars. It tells you how many kikars of each there was. Followed by, and then the remainder is given in shkalim, in the shekel coin. How many shkalim are there in a kikar? The Torah itself alludes to this in Parashas Pekudei. There were 3,000 shkalim in a kikar, at least in the kikar that is spoken about in the Chumash. As we will see, that not all... That when you're dealing with the denomination, the coin of Hektish, which means of the Beis HaMikdash or of the Mishkan, it was often larger than the same denomination when it was Chol, when it was regular currency. So you could have a Kikar of Hektish and you could have a Kikar of non-Hektish. So at least the one that's spoken about in the Chumash is 3,000 shkalim, if you do the math. So if a shekel is 20 gera, and a kikar is 3,000 shekel, multiply 20 times 3,000, and a kikar is 60,000 gera, whatever a gera is. In the Gemara, of course, we are familiar with what is considered to be the smallest size coin, which is a copper coin. And what is that? Who knows?
The word dinar keeps coming.
There is a dinar coin, but that's not the lowest.
Not it,
we'll get to that. Yeah, and you're right. There are such things as a dinar and a sela. There are various other types of coins. But the smallest is a pruta, as in shava pruta, value of a pruta. We know that that something is not considered to have value if it is less than a shava pruta. The shava means equal to. Pruta is the smallest coin that has any value in the Torah.
Isn't the wedding ring supposed to be
some kind? Anything that any time the Torah says you must use money for something,
yeah,
it has to have the value at least of a pruta.
Right.
So a wedding band,
right,
has to be valued at least at a pruta. Of course, wedding bands are usually more expensive than that, but it is for this reason that wedding bands are supposed to be just a plain gold band, mm-hmm, and not to have gems or things like that, because gems can fluctuate based on the market. As we know, diamonds are artificially inflated to be a certain price, but theoretically diamonds could be worth very, very little if, in fact, all the diamonds that were available would flood the market. So it doesn't have inherent value. What has inherent value? Metals that there is a finite amount of those metals on the earth, and therefore there is an inherent value. Gold has an inherent value because there is only so much gold in the world. So the but so does silver, so does copper. So we don't want the wedding band to have its value based on its artistic beauty or on some gem or stone, which there may be a lot of them. We just don't realize that there's many more of them in the world, and therefore their value is artificial. We want the wedding band to be made out of something which its value is intrinsic, and that's why it's a plain band. And but the reason why it has to be worth something is because the Torah says to use money, and the bare bones of money is shava pruta, the value of a pruta. Similarly, if a person would steal something that is valued at less than a pruta, then the Torah requirement that you have to return what you stole would not apply, because it's as if you didn't steal anything. It's insignificant. It has no value. It has no inherent value. Even if society may either place value on it or not place value on something more expensive than it, but pruta is considered to be the cutoff line between value and non-value in the Torah. This is one of the things that the generation of the Mabul, of the flood, that they were held responsible for, because they deliberately would steal less than a pruta, because that way there was no consequence, and they would it would be something like the example I was told when I was growing up was you'd have someone with a fruit stand and trying to sell fruit, and someone would go by and pluck a grape, mm-hmm, and eat it. It's less than a pruta. Now, I don't know if a grape is less than a pruta or not, but you get the idea. You take something really small, but then if a lot of people do that, obviously the vendor is out of luck. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the major sins of the Dor HaMabul, of the generation of the flood. But pruta is the smallest value. Mrs. Lewis, you got your hand up.
Two questions. How do you spell pruta in Hebrew?
Pei. I'm going to put it on the board momentarily. Pei, resh, vav, tes, hey. Pruta.
Okay. And what happens if it has like sentimental value?
Sentimental value is not considered legally to have value. In a legal sense, sentimental value is a personal value, but it has no value on the market. And any time the Torah speaks about value, it has to have value on the market. It has to be something that you can buy and sell on the market. It doesn't take away from the fact that it is sinful and wrong to damage somebody's property, even if it has no value on the market, but it has value to that person. But in terms of forcing the damager or the thief to pay, we can only do that when it has value on the market. And that's a pruta. So pruta is the smallest unit of currency that has any value. How much is a pruta compared to a gera, which we said there are 20 gera in a shekel, and we said there are 60,000 gera in a kikar, kikar being the largest size coin or value that we have in the Torah, how many prutas are there in a gera? Prutas smaller than a gera or less expensive than a gera. How many prutas are there in a gera? 32. A pruta is 1/32 of a gera. So now we're getting a little bit of a sense of what it is. I know it's tempting to say a pruta is a penny, because in our minds, that's the smallest value. But remember, we're talking here about inherent value. We're not talking about the coins that are being used in the country one lives in. There used to be smaller size currency than the penny in the United States. Maybe it's before it was the United States. What is that?
We had half pennies.
Half pennies, right. Right. So because of inflation, etc., so therefore pennies now have become very, very very worth very little, but we're talking about inherent value. But let's use penny just to give ourselves a sense of what we're talking about, just so we can have an idea. So if a pruta is, it takes 32 prutas to get to a gera, and then it takes 20 geras to get to a shekel. So 20 times 32 is 640. So that would make a shekel somewhere around $6.40. Approximately, we're using, right, just using our sense of pruta being a penny, which means a half a shekel would be $3.20. That would be the basic idea when the Torah uses the word shekel. A kikar, which is 3,000 shekel, which is 3,000 shekel, at least the one that's spoken about in the Torah is 3,000 shekel. So we're going from 640 gera, which is how many gera there are in a shekel, times 3,000. So what is that? That's 1,920,000, is that right? Did we do that right? 3,000 times 640.
That's a lot.
30,000 times 64, right? 1,920,000? So, is that right?
The numbers are right.
Yeah. So it's close to it's close to 2 million pennies, which is not $2 million. That would be about $20,000. That the kikar is somewhere in the range of $20,000. So you're talking about what was the
range?
What?
That's such a big range between.
Right. Right.
Yeah,
right.
$20,000 bill.
Right.
Hmm.
Now, there is a little bit of a confusing point which makes the value which I'm placing on it a little bit difficult, because we're talking about weights. The weight, a shekel, has 20 gera in it. Now, there was also a coin called a gera. So a gera is 1/20 of a shekel. That's fine. That's all good. The thing is that when you go from pruta to gera, you're switching, or at least from, I'm not sure about gera itself, but certainly when you're going to shekel, you're switching from copper to silver.
It weighs more.
Which weighs more?
Well, the silver.
Silver's lighter.
Silver's lighter than copper, but gold's probably heavier.
Gold, okay. But what I was saying is, but you're switching from copper to silver, and silver certainly is inherently more valuable than copper. If you have the same weights of copper and silver, the silver is going to be more valuable. And similarly, if you have the same weight gold is going to be more valuable. When you move to kikar, at least the kikar that I'm talking about in the Torah, it's talking about gold. We're talking about the menorah. So it's unclear to me when we're putting this value on it, we're saying that there are 3,000 shekel in a kikar, but we're also switching from silver to gold, so I don't know if the price of a kikar is only 3,000 times that of a shekel. It might be a lot more than that because we're switching from silver to gold. This is not something that is unknown. This is something that I don't know. I'm just not sure about this point. So I'm a little bit hesitant to give exact dollar values or even ballpark dollar values, which is what we're doing, because that suggests that all the currency is linear. And that's
what mean linear?
Meaning that you just multiply it out, that if a pruta is a penny,
yeah,
and a gera is 20 cents,
yeah,
and a shekel is $6.40, and we moved up to $20,000 for the kikar, if we're going to play like that, but that's assuming that we're going with the same increments of types of coins. But it is possible that as you switch metals, you're going to have to increase the price of the coin by a lot more than just multiplying. So that I'm not sure about. But this is giving us at least an idea of what's going on over here.
So yeah. Let me ask you, would that mean that the 3,000 shekel weight is in a key card? You're talking about weight.
Well, that's possible. That's possible. That would make it a very heavy coin. Right? I mean, how big is the coin? But remember, the menorah was made out of it.
Right. Then
so,
it was huge.
The menorah was big. It was big. It was very large. It was at floor. It was a standing on the floor menorah that Aaron had to step go up on steps to light.
And it was solid.
So
that's heavy.
Yeah. So it is definitely a major amount of gold.
Gotcha.
Right. Yeah.
Usually with gold, let's say something is valued at $1,000 in gold, silver would be like $750 usually.
Okay, well that's in today's
market is like a little, you know, silver's always like a
less.
Little less.
It's a lighter metal.
Yeah, but platinum right now is higher than either one though.
Yeah.
But we're not talking about platinum.
There was no coins of platinum.
It doesn't discusses the metals that are discussed in the Torah are copper, silver, and gold, tin, lead.
And there's no pewter?
Those are the ones that are discussed in the Torah. The Torah talks about Oferes. Oferes is lead. And Bedil. Bedil is generally assumed to be tin. I can't say for sure it's tin. That's why they translate it as tin. I believe there may be two other metals discussed. But those are the...
Bronze?
No, it's an alloy.
Well, bronze is it, right.
It's an alloy. Yeah. It's not a pure metal.
Right. Okay. Right. Bronze is a type of right.
It's a copper alloy.
Right, it's copper alloy. And iron is also.
Iron is
base
metal.
It's on
the
periodic chart. Iron's iron.
Right. Steel is iron with carbon, correct?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. At any rate, so this is the, it just gave us a basic sense of the types of coins that are discussed in the Torah. Now, historically, the Gemara discusses, based on the pasuk we're about to read, and it's going to be a little confusing how the pasuk teaches it to us. So I'm first going to tell you what Chazal tell us, what our sages say, and then we'll fit it into the pasuk. They tell us that in the time of Yechezkel, the shekel was increased in value. Whereas until then, the shekel was worth 20 gerah, it was the weight of 20 gerah. They increased the size of the shekel to 24 gerah. They increased it by 1/6. Now that means that all the coins that are larger than a gerah became that much more, 1/6 more expensive or greater in value. They increased the size of the shekel and all the other coins that are greater than a gerah. So that means that you now have to add a sixth to any calculation that you make. So where we said, as we just said, the shekel has 20 gerah, they moved it up to 24 gerah. The kikar, which had, we said, 60,000 gerah, now becomes 72,000 gerah. You move it up by a sixth. That's what ends up happening once you increase the value of the... I'd like to have a succinct word, the opposite of devalue, to
appreciate.
But it wasn't artificial. They didn't just say, snap of the fingers, the shekel is now worth 24 gerah. They actually increased the size of the shekel so that now it was a 24 gerah shekel. Which means that when you brought a half a shekel to the Beis HaMikdash, you were now bringing a half a shekel that was larger
than the previous shekel.
Right, although wait, I'm not sure that's true. I take that back. Because the Torah itself says you're not supposed to do more or less than the half a shekel that's in the Torah. The Torah itself says we're talking about a shekel that's 20 gerah and not more or less than that. So I want to reserve judgment on that. But at any rate, from then on, when you're dealing with prices and values in Tanakh, we're dealing with larger prices and values than before, which, if you think about it, is actually a deflationary move because it means that the coin itself is worth more, and therefore its buying power is more. It can buy more than it used to. Yeah.
How
I'm assuming that all the other countries have their own currency at this point in time.
Yes.
Now, if they're changing currency, how do they get everyone in Israel to turn in what they had?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know how that works. I don't know how that would happen. Could be it was only when they went back for the second Beis HaMikdash that they did this.
Oh, but when they came back for the
Yeah, Shabbat could be that that's when it happened. I don't know. It's a good question. Okay. So, let me begin to put some of this on the board because we're going to have to follow this carefully in order to understand what is happening in this next pasuk. Okay. So, let's use first the smallest size coin. I'm going to put it on top, even though you can surely go on bottom. It's easier for me to go from there, from bottom to top. So, the pruta, and I'm going to use gera as our standard, because since that's what the Torah does, and that is what the Navi does. So a pruta, you know, you want me to do it in English? It'll be easier. Should I do it in English? The pruta. Is 1/32 of a gera. We'll jump ahead. There are a couple of coins between pruta and gera, but we'll just use gera. And that's our standard. That's one. And so far, we've talked about shekel. Now, there is a coin that comes between gera and shekel, and I'm going to tell it to you because it's a relatively well-known term, and that is the zuz. Okay? The zuz.
Two zuz that my father bought.
That's right. Right.
Pesach.
That's right. Right. Chagadya.
Right.
Right. Bisrei zuz. With two zuz. Mm-hmm. He bought it for two zuz. A zuz is 4 gera.
Can you
just put it? I'm sorry, that's wrong. Right, sorry. It's 5 gera. Excuse me. What's that? What should I do?
Just put the G for gera there so we 5G.
Okay. Okay. So it's 1/32 of a G.
What?
1 G, it's going to look like grams. This is 5 G. Okay? So the zuz is 5 gera. And the shekel, at least when it began in the Torah, is therefore 20 gera. Now, when they increased the value, when they inflated the zuz, the shekel, they did that by inflating the zuz. The zuz later became, I'm going to put the new value in parentheses, became 6 gera, which makes the shekel 24 gera. There's 4 zuz in a shekel. Now, by the way, 2 zuz is not a lot of money. When you're talking about in Chagadya, 2 zuz is not a lot of money. I mean, if we're going to say that a pruta is about a penny, if we're going to say that, so then how many pruta are in a zuz? You multiply it out, 32 times 5, which is 600. Is that right?
No.
No, is sorry, is 160. 160 pruta in a zuz, which is only $1.60. So 2 zuz is only $3.20. Not a lot of money to buy a kid.
Yeah.
Right? And even if you inflate the zuz to 6 gera, it's still very small, relatively speaking. So, okay. Now, I'm going to check one point on that. Just check one thing before we... Yeah. Now, I do want to take one thing back on that point because the other name for a zuz is dinar. But before we jump to conclusions, there are two dinars. There is the silver dinar and there's the gold dinar. This was the dinar kesef, the silver dinar. Later we're going to have a gold dinar, which is of course greater. My notes don't have the word zuz for a gold dinar. But if the two words are interchangeable, then it could be that in Chagadya we're actually talking about the gold dinar, which is more expensive. So we'll hold judgment on that. Okay. At any rate, this is what we have so far. I'll put in one more, just so that we... Should I put in one more? Just, I don't want to confuse anybody. Just put in one more to make sure we have... let's see where we are here. A kikar is way down. That's going to be the largest denomination. All right.
The ones that were tin and what? The gadil and the oferis?
Yeah.
Are they more than the pruta?
No. No, they were. They're not mentioned as coins in the Torah. As coins, the Torah only mentions copper, silver, and gold. That's the only thing the Torah mentions is coins.
There's also another word for gera. It's called ma'a.
Yes. Another word for gera is ma'a. Mem ayin hey. That's right. Yeah. There's actually more words than that for it. That the Gemara uses various words for it. I'm going to put one more in that I didn't tell you about yet, just so that we have it, because it's another denomination which is worth knowing, which is the dinar. This was a gold coin, the dinar. And the dinar was 125 gera, which later, when it was inflated, became 150 gera. That's the dinar. Now, let's just make clear that, I want to make sure we have clear what is what over here. From here we're dealing with silver. Oops. This is all silver. This is copper. There were other copper coins that I left out. Clearly, you have to have other coins because having a 32 coin gap, you know, that there are 32 prutas in a gera, you're going to have some things in between. It's too large an amount to have no other coins. So there were other coins between them, but they're not for our purposes now. And here, we're already starting with gold. But there are going to be more gold coins, so I'm not going to draw any lines. I'm just going to put gold over here. So here we've already begun with gold. Once you get to the dinar of...
You said the dinar was also silver.
Right. So the silver zuz was also called a dinar of kesef. Oh,
okay.
The dinar of gold is 25 times the dinar, the zuz. 25 times greater. So again, I don't know if this was also called the zuz, but if the chad gad is actually referring to two of these, then we're dealing with more money. Okay, fine. All right, now, what's going to happen here is that Yechezkel is going to talk about some new coins which had not been minted until then, that now are going to be said, they're going to be told that they should become minted. That's what's going to happen right now. So, let's read this pasuk. Yud Beis 12. It says, V'hashekel esrim gera. The shekel was 20 gera. That is no novelty. That's exactly what it says in the Torah. The Torah says that a shekel is 20 gera. This is before it was inflated. Then he says, Esrim shkalim, 20 shekel. Chamisha v'esrim shkalim, 25 shekel. Asara v'chamisha shekel, 15 shekel. Hamane yielachem. That will be the size of a mane. If you add together 20 shekel, 25 shekel, and 15 shekel, you add those three numbers together, you will get the value of a mane. How much is it if you add together 20, 25, and 15? That's 60. So a mana is 60 shekel. Now, I must tell you that before Yechezkel started talking, there was a coin called a mana, and the mana was 50 shekel. Here, I'm sorry, wait, scratch that. The mana was 25 shekel. The mana was 25 shekel. That was the size of the mana. Here it says that the mana was 60 shekel. So this is very difficult to understand. How does Yechezkel tell us that the money is 60 shekel when it was really only 25 shekel? So it is from here that our sages tell us two things, two important things. Number one, that there was a mundane money, the regular money you would use in regular everyday commercial transactions, right? And then there was the money of Hekdesh. Then when you're dealing with the Beis HaMikdash, which is what Chesko is dealing with here, it was doubled. So it went from being 25 to being 50.
What did people use money for in connection
to the Beis HaMikdash? If there was a pledge of money to the Beis HaMikdash, that would be the primary reason. I suppose that was the main reason. But it was also, there were deals that were struck, for instance, when the Beis HaMikdash had to have contracted a source of flour and oil and wine that was needed throughout the year, and animals. So there were contracts that were signed with the Beis HaMikdash. So the regular mana was 25. The Hektish mana was 50. And in addition, our sages learn from here that the coins were inflated by 1/6. So that it went from 50 to becoming 60. Those two things are learned from this pasuk. Okay? Now we're not done yet. We're not done yet. Yes?
Why doesn't he come out and just say 60 shekel? Why the 20 plus the 25 plus the 15?
Excellent. That's why we're not done yet. Exactly right. Exactly right. So Yechezkel, why did he list it as add 20 plus 25 plus 15? Because Yechezkel wants them to also mint some new coins. One will be a 20 shekel coin, one will be a 25 shekel coin, and one will be a 15 shekel coin. That's what he wants them to do.
Is this Yechezkel or God?
Well, Hashem is speaking through Yechezkel.
Yeah, so yeah. Why not do it in denomination order? Why out of order like that?
That's also a good question. Okay? But let's break it down first to what it means. Why 20, 25, and 15? So these new coins are going to be the value of 20 shekel, 25 shekel, and 15 shekel. Why those numbers? Well, a 20 shekel coin will be a third of the mana of Hektish. The mana of Hektish is 60 shekel, so this is a third of that. So that makes sense. You want coins that are various fractions of what you have. For instance, a dollar, we have half dollars, which are half of a dollar. Obviously, we have quarters, which are a quarter of a dollar. We have dimes, which are a tenth of a dollar. And we have nickels, which are a 20th of a dollar. It makes sense to have various fractions of your denomination in order to be able to use it for transactions. So there's going to be a 20 shekel coin, which is one third of a mana of Hektish. There's also going to be, I'm skipping now, a 15 shekel coin, which is a quarter of a mana of Hektish. 15 is a quarter of 60. That also makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
What about 25? 25 doesn't fit. 25 is a very strange fraction. That would be 5/12, which is a very unusual fraction to use of the money. So to this, Rashi explains that Hashem also wanted there to be a coin that would be half of the original sized money of Hektish. The original sized money of Hektish was 50, and now there would be a 25 shekel coin, which would be the original size money of Chol, the regular money. It would be a 25 shekel coin, which was no longer in use because they bumped it up by a sixth. So there would still be a 25 shekel coin to replace the money, which has now become the regular money, a 30 shekel coin, the Hektish money, 60 shekel coin. So let me put these new numbers on the board, and I realize it is confusing. If you're not a numbers person, then it's not even fun, but nevertheless, we're learning it, so let's get it straight. So we'll go from lowest to highest, which is what we've been doing until now. So there's going to be a new coin called a 20 shekel coin, a 20 shekel. Excuse me, we'll start with 15, sorry. A 15 shekel coin, which, as we've already mentioned, is a quarter of a mana, of a mana of hektish, so a 15 shekel coin. Now, the 15 shekel coin is in the new... Let's leave it at that. Sorry, let's not confuse anything. 15 shekel coin. A shekel is 20 gera. So how much is the 15 shekel coin? How many gera? 15 times 20 is 300. So this will be 300 gera. Now here, we're not going to use old and new because the 15 shekel coin is minted after the inflation of the money. So there's no longer an old and a new. So we're just going to put it right in the middle over here of 300 gera. That's the 15 shekel coin. Then there is a 20 shekel coin, which 20 times 20 is 400. Again, there's no old and new. It's the 400 gera coin. And then we have the 25 shekel coin, which is the size of the old mana, which is not hektish, the 25 shekel coin, which is 500 gera. So using the gera as our standard, these numbers are pretty linear. They're pretty nice. 150, double that is 300, 400, 500. Various coins that were worth various amounts of even numbers of gera.
And those shekels are also silver.
No, this is all gold.
Oh, it's all gold.
Yeah, this is all gold. It's a 15 shekel coin, but it is a gold coin. You know what? We'll leave that as a question mark. I'm assuming it's gold because we've already moved into gold with the dinar. So, but here I'm not sure. You're bringing up a good point because since it's using shekel as its standard
frame of reference.
Right, frame of reference. I don't know if it's silver or gold. It's a good question. Okay. That's a good question. So that's a good point. After this comes the money. The money of the money. How are we going to spell it?
M-A-N-A-H.
It's going to sound like food.
Yeah. M-A-N-N-E-H.
Huh?
They spell it M-A-N-E-H.
M-A-N-N-E-H.
So it's spelled differently.
Okay.
Here it's spelled M-A-apostrophe-A-H.
Okay.
And here it's M-A-N-N-A-H.
Okay.
Okay.
The mana. The mana. Now, here we're talking about the regular mana, which is half of the hektish mana. The regular mana is 600 gera. And then comes... we'll call it the holy mana. So we have the holy mana, which is going to be double the regular mana, so we're up to 1200 gera. That's all that's spoken about in Yecheskel. Now I've told you already that there's also the kikar, and the kikar is well, let's put it down first. The kikar, which is going to be 30 times that, which is in the new denomination, is going to be 3,600 gera. Here already, with the kikar, we can use parentheses for the new one and put down the old one as 3,000. Because the Torah explicitly talks about not 3,000. I'm sorry. Those numbers are wrong. Excuse me. Don't write that down. You already did. I'm sorry. The old amount was 60,000 gera, and the new one is 72,000 gera. This the Torah explicitly speaks about. The Torah says that a kikar is 3,000 shekel. That the Torah says explicitly in Parashas Pekudei, I'm assuming that we're dealing with gold once you get to these higher numbers, but we'll leave it out because we're not 100% sure. So there you have the amounts that we have, at least in the Ephesical, that he added in, and then the some of the other denominations. When the Torah therefore counts in Parshas Pekudei, and it says how much gold was collected, it tells you how much gold. It says how many kikar, and then it tells you kikar with a remainder of shekel. So the remainder of shekel will be less than 3,000, because once you hit 3,000, that's another kikar. That's what Rashi says in Parshas Pekudei. So okay, fine. Now the question becomes, why did they inflate the coins? Because now you have a new value system, they inflated the coins. I have an uncle who's now retired, but worked in finance all his life, and actually he's a Talmud Chacham, has learned through Shas several times. And I called him, you know who he is, Yoel Unger in Denver.
I knew Unger.
Chana Noah's father, her father, right?
Okay.
So I called him last night to ask him why they would have done this, why inflate the coins. So he said that his understanding is to make sure that no one undercut Hekdesh. Because since if you make a pledge, right, for a certain amount of money, and then a person gives less, so that's a serious offense. The person has to be careful not to do that. So this way, it ensured that no one would undercut Hekdesh. I don't know if the purpose was that if a person made a pledge for 100 shekel and only gave 90, they're still covered, because the new amount is a sixth greater. So.
Okay.
Right, so then you've given more than you have to. 90 is really 104. You've given more than you have to give. If that's the reason, if I got the math right over there, so if that would be one possibility, or if it means because of inflation, that when you made the pledge for 100 shekel. And then the shekel goes down in value, and when you pay 100 shekel, you're actually paying less than what you pledged. This way, you're covered, because really 100 shekel is more than what the amount is in the Torah. I'm not sure which way that goes, but that's what my uncle told me. His understanding is of why the coins were inflated. So that's what he says. That's what he told me.
What is your uncle's name again?
Unger. Rabbi Yoel Unger. So that's a possibility. I'm not sure. To me, it's a little bit difficult to say that about all the coins, because some of the coins of Hekdesh were actually double the non-Hekdesh coins. So they're already very much inflated. If it's double what the other coin is, it's highly inflated. So you don't need to inflate it any more than that. So I'm not sure why. But here, the way Rashi understands it is that Chazal are learning from here that A, the Hekdesh coin, the Hekdesh money was doubled, and B, it was also the coins were inflated a sixth more than what they are, that they say in the Torah. Yeah?
Is this the point before the second Beis HaMikdash?
Well, clearly Yechezkel is talking about the third Beis HaMikdash, but the Gemara learns from here that they inflated the coins. So I imagine we're talking about second Beis HaMikdash time.
But I wonder if, because the Beis HaMikdash needed to be rebuilt and things refurbished and redone, that maybe that's why they inflated it, to get more funds in to build.
That could be. Although we do know that when they built the second Beis HaMikdash, they were not very wealthy. And the Gemara speaks about how they did certain things in a less expensive way, and then when they got more money, they improved. So for instance, the doors, the gates of the second Beis HaMikdash were originally made out of copper, and then as the Bnei Yisrael became wealthier during the second Beis HaMikdash era, they turned them into gold.
Somebody donated the doors, right?
Yeah. Well, they raised money, and they were able to change them into gold. Into gold gates, the exception being Shar Nikonor, that was the one that remained as copper, yeah, because of the nace that happened to it, and because it was beautiful copper. But there are other examples like that where they increased what they had, they improved parts of the Beis HaMikdash as they became wealthier. So when they first came up, they weren't a very wealthy country. So I don't know if people were able to handle a higher, coin and inflation.
Their money would have been worth less because they would have been an oppressed nation.
Yeah.
Within a nation, so their money would have been deflated.
That's very likely.
Before it became inflated.
That's very likely. That's very likely. Yeah. Okay. So that is Pasuk Yud Beis and the currency. We go on to Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13. Zos ha-truma asher tarimu. This is the truma that you should remove. Now, in the Torah, we know that when you take off, here's another introduction, when one takes off what we call miser, tithes, tithe means a tenth. So we know that the first thing a person would take off is truma. When you have a pile of grain, the first thing you take off is truma. And who does that go to? That goes to the Kohen. That goes to the Kohen. Okay? Then a person would take off Meiser, which goes to the Levi. And then a person would take off another Meiser, Meiser Sheni, which goes to... Okay, so depending on the year. Some of the years it would go to be eaten in Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim, Yerush, okay, or to the poor, or given to the poor. Those are the two, depending on the year that you were taking off your second Meiser. This is Meiser Rishon, and this is Meiser Sheni. Okay, how much is Meiser? Well, Meiser means a tenth. That's clear and obvious. Both these Meisers are a tenth. Oh, by the way, one more thing. The Levi would then also take off Meiser afterwards. That's called Trumas Meiser. The Levi would then take off another Meiser. He would then take off another Meiser, which would be given to the Kohen. Okay. So these numbers, Meiser, Meiser, and Meiser, are all a tenth. So let's ignore Truma for a minute. Let's say you have 100 bundles of wheat. Ignore Truma for a minute. You're going to take off 10 and give it to the Levi, which is going to leave you with 90. And you're going to take off how much?
9.
A tenth of 90, which is 9, which you're going to either eat in Yerushalayim or give to the poor depending on the year. So you took off 10, leaving you with 90. You took off 9 more, leaving you with 81. So your take home was 81 bundles of wheat. I ignored Truma. You gave 10 to the Levi. The Levi would then take a tenth of 10. So he would take off 1 and give it to the Kohen. And his take home would be 9. That's the way it works over here. How much is Truma? Well, it doesn't say in the Torah anywhere how much Truma you should take off. From the simple reading of the Torah, even one kernel of wheat, chita achas, one kernel of wheat is sufficient for Truma. Just take off one kernel, give it to the Kohen, and you have completed you fulfilled your obligation of Truma. According to the Torah, that seems all that you need. The only thing is the Torah also says you should give it, misina, you should give the Truma to the Kohen. Giving a kernel of wheat, just like I told you that legally less than a pruta is not valuable, giving an item that is so small that you could just, drop it and lose it, that's not called giving. Because you're not giving anything. It's not called a gift. Okay, what are you giving him? This little kernel of wheat. What is it? So, therefore, it's clear from the Torah that there is a preferred amount that one should give. But it's not clear what it is. Here, Yechezkel tells us what it is. So, he writes, Zos ha-truma asher tarimu. This is the truma that you should lift off, you should take off. Tarim means to lift up. So this is the truma you should take. Shishis ha'efa mechomer hachitim. A sixth of an efa from a chomer of wheat. We said last time that a chomer is 10 efa. Is that right? Did I get that right? Hold on.
Did I say it correctly? A chomer, yes. A chomer is 10 epha. So, a sixth of a tenth of a chomer. What's a sixth of a tenth? That's 1/60. 1/60 of, from a chomer of chitim, and he says the same thing. V'shishisem ha'epha mechomer ha'seorim. And take a sixth of an epha of a chomer of barley. So it's a sixth of a tenth, which is 1/60. So our sages tell us, because there are other places where there are other, here we have 1/60. There are other places where it implies that the amount is 1/40, and other places 1/50. Sorry, our sages tell us that the bare minimum one should give is 1/60 of their grain. A generous person will give 1/40. And a Beinoni, a regular everyday person, would be give 1/50, which is 2%. So Truma is a range of between 1/40 and 1/60. That's what one should take off. 1/40 is 2.5%, 1/50 is 2%, and 1/60 is, do the math, whatever it is. Whatever comes up to you over there. Okay. So is whatever, 60%? How about it? Okay, 6%. No, not 6%. What is it? 1/60 is 0.1666. Yeah, something like that. Okay, fine.
When we're doing our own miser, like if we make $100, okay, do we just take the $10 and
okay.
put it aside? Or do we take the $10, but as soon as we've spent one, then we take it out of what's left? Because they're taking it out of what's left.
Right.
They're not taking it from gross.
Correct. Now they're taking out of what's left after you take off what you are obligated to take off.
But like the miser for miser sheni, mm-hmm. it's not taken off the top.
Correct.
It's taken off of
after
what's
the
left.
First miser is taken off. Right, right. Well, when we take off miser today, it's not the same rules in the Torah. We're doing miser ksufim. We're taking off miser from our earnings. That's what we take off. That is a different halacha. It obviously mimics this one. But it's a different halacha. The way it says it in Shulchan Aruch is that a person should take off 20% of their earnings and give it to tzedakah. Then the Mechaber writes, the Shulchan Aruch writes, if a person can't do 20%, then they should do 10%. Now, we all know that typically everybody gives 10%. That's because it is very difficult. Unless a person is really doing very well financially, it's very difficult to give 20%. 10% is hard enough. That's why it is generally understood you give 10%. But the truth is, the way the Shulchan Aruch says it is, give 20%, and if you can't do that, then give
10%. Does it also say you can't give more than 20%?
It says one should not give more than 20%. The poskim say that if a person is way, way, way above their needs, then they can... Then they can, well, you know, it depends on the, then they can give more than 20%. But a typical person, even if they're wealthy, should not give more than 20% because that will make them into a non-wealthy family. Mm-hmm. But there is a level of person...
Isn't that what Nicanor did? He gave more than 1/20th of what he had. He sold everything.
That was for the base. That was for the base of others. That wasn't for Meiser. He wasn't doing it to for this mitzvah of Meiser Ksafim. He was doing it because he wanted to give something to the base of Megosh.
So you can do that to give to the basement.
Yeah, I mean, you know, theoretically a person could... The 20% cap, there clearly is going to be a threshold where a person beyond that is just... There's so much money that clearly it's not going to hurt him to give more than
20%. I think we're talking about the net, not the gross.
Well, okay, so now, the thing is that when we talk about giving tzedakah in general, we are not talking about gross anyway. We're talking about after taxes, take-home pay... That's what we're talking about. But I want us to be careful with take-home pay because very often employees have deducted from their paycheck things that are considered to be part of take-home pay by halacha. For instance, if health insurance is purchased using one's paycheck, that has to be refactored back in mm-hmm. before one mm-hmm. factors miser mm-hmm. because that's considered a regular household expense, just like buying food. Mm-hmm. So that has to be refactored back in. But any taxes that are withheld... That's considered to be that we never earned it, that the government keeps and we never got it in the first place. Even if one pays estimated taxes, it's the same thing. And therefore, income tax would be exempt from miser. Right. What about investment money? What about like money that goes into a retirement account, something like that? So there you have two choices. It's almost like taxes. You have two choices. Either you can take off the MICER before it goes into the IRA. You could do it that way. In which case, when the money is taken out, one would not have to take off MICER from the principal, only from the interest. But, or a person could just have it go into the IRA, and then when they use the money in the future, whatever money they take out, they first take off MICER from the principal and the interest. Either way one does it, that would be acceptable to do it either one of those two ways. So it's probably simpler to do it the second way, but a person may want to say, look, I don't want to have to deal with that much MICER in my retirement, so I'd rather do it now, so that way I don't have to worry about it later on. But any investment income that one redeems, one also has to take off MICER from, because that's income. As long as it's invested, one does not have to take off MICER. But once a person makes a redemption and actually has the money, then one has to take off MICER from that redemption as well. So stocks, as they fluctuate up and down, one does not have to take off MICER. But if one cashes in a stock or sells a stock and ends up or gets a dividend, then, and it's not reinvested, then one has to take off MICER from that as well.
After
income taxes. That's right. You know, there's other types of taxes. There's sales tax, but that's not considered, that is not exempt from MICER.
But that's when you're spending, not when you're...
Yeah, but the difference is because the sales tax is assessed after you get the money. I have the money, and then I want to buy something, I have to pay an extra tax. Mm-hmm. So that's why that is included in MICER. But with the income tax, the way that even if the government allows you to take it home and then pay them, but in theory, the government is saying that that money is our money. You never earned it. Every dollar you earn, 20 cents or 30 cents or 40 cents or 50 cents, is ours. Including FICA, whatever other types of taxes that you pay that would go on your...
If somebody gives you a gift, nothing that you earn, they just give you a birthday check or something, do you have to take MICER on that? Is there a difference between a gift and income?
Okay, so that's a very good question. So it depends on who's giving it and why they're giving it and how much it is. So, meaning that if money is given as a check in lieu of a particular item, which means that it's your bar mitzvah, it's your wedding, you know, it's a baby gift, whatever's going on over there, it's a birthday present, and it's clear the person who's giving it to you really wanted to buy you an item but had no idea what to get you, so they gave you money with the expectation you'll use the money to get something that you want, then one does not need to take off MICER. Usually smaller size checks, that is the idea. Person gives an $18 check, a $25 check, a $36 check. That's the idea. It's that they know what to get you. So here's money and do with it as you please. So that is one would not have to take off MICER from that. If it's a larger amount of money, then clearly it's the money that was the intention. Clearly it was the force of the gift was the size of the check. Here's a $1,000 birthday gift. Right? That's not so you can go buy yourself a $1,000 item. That's clearly the force of the gift is the value of the check. Now you may turn around and give it and use it for your mortgage, but it was clearly the purpose of the gift was for the value of the money itself.
What changes it?
That's not clear. It's not clear. You know, sometimes it's obvious by who gave it. That's why I said who gives it. So then one would have to take off MICER. However, even if it's $1,000, if the person says, I'm giving this to you so that you can use it for, mm-hmm. you know, I want you to use this for your mortgage, I want you to use this for your groceries, I want you to use this to pay for a home improvement, and they give you a check for $30,000, you do not take off MICER. Because they're buying you a home improvement. That's what they were trying to give you. They don't know who to hire for you. They don't get a contractor. You're going to take care of that problem. So they just give you the check, and then when that they go MICER. So even though, in theory, if one gets a gift from their relative, from their parents, from a close relative, in theory, one should take off MICER when it's a large amount of money. But usually when a close relative gives a cash gift, it is specific. It is... You know, mm-hmm. I know you're behind on your payments. I know, you know, whatever. Usually that's what's going on over there. It's not usual that it's just, you know, okay, here's, you know, I know you don't need it, but here's $10,000. That's not usually what happens in a family setting. So
just for fun,
by the way. Okay, so we didn't cover that much ground, but we will continue with Hashem on next Wednesday. And I mentioned, some of you weren't here when I mentioned it before, that next Wednesday I cannot have the shiur at 8 o'clock. We're going to start next Wednesday, and I'm sorry if you can't make it at 7:15.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.